The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
الله أكبر الآن الله أكبر بدأ التمهيد على بلدة مجدل الله أكبر أخوكم مرصد أبو مشعل من السويداء على يسار السجرة الله أكبر اللهم استجد الرمي الله أكبر
الله اكبر هاي لبين من جديد الله اكبر ابشروا ابشروا هاي بداجة ابشروا جاتنا مدحة بداجة الله اكبر الله اكبر ابشروا
الله اكبر اسير درزي الله اكبر الله اكبر اسود العجيب
شو هذول هذول شو هذول هذول شوارع هذول شوارع شواربك
او لك او او او
يا باطل
حول الله يا بطل حول الله دين الله دين الله
مجازر مجازر في مضافة البدر ناس عزل ناس عزل يلا جميل حسن اللي عبد طبله للشرع والأمن العام رجل ثمانيني رجل سبعيني مدنيين عزل هاي المجازر والله التتار والمهول لم يفعلوا ذلك
سيارة فيها أطفال أطفال ونسوان ما فيها أي سلاح قاتلينهم كلهم سيارة فيها أطفال ونسوان
Another massacre playing out in southern Syria this week. And as far as I can tell, I think Melanie Phillips is the only person that's writing about it, that's reporting on this. It's happening in broad daylight, as you see there. And of course, the man heading up the nation, Jilani, he's the West's favorite. He's the new favorite jihadi in suits. Trimmed, like Melanie says, trims his beard a little bit, puts on a nice suit, and the West embraces him. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, the last day of the week. Can't believe it's Friday already, but here we are. We've got World Watch lined up for today, later on, excuse me. And of course, a lot to get to. One thing that really stands out, just as you consider what, and I'll take you through Melanie Phillips's articles here in a second. But you contrast it with just the sheer stupidity of the, at least the news cycle here in the United States. I mean, the big reveal last night for the Wall Street Journal that President Trump was doodling, evidently drawing a naked stick figure woman or something, and then sending the card off to Jeffrey Epstein back in, I think, 2003, with all of the reporters that the Wall Street Journal has on its staff, you would think they could get a little bit of information about the sex trafficking ring headed up by Epstein. And everyone, all of the perpetrators involved. As you've heard this week, there's 254 victims, at least, that we know of. But we don't know anything about the clients. We do know that President Trump was doodling on a card 20-some years ago. And then you hear all the big coverage that the not-so-funny man got his show canceled. And then big news about PBS and NPR. It just really is sickening. When you see sickening events, and then you see how easily distracted we are. And what makes the story coming out of Syria worse is everyone gangs up on the one individual that tries to stop the genocide. That would be Bibi Netanyahu. Who else is doing anything about the rape, the murder, the carnage in southern Syria, except for Israel? Nobody even cares to report on it. And then, you know the problem with Epstein. I mean, I covered all that with you yesterday. Everyone wants to just sweep it under the rug. The rape, the sadistic crimes committed against little girls, and we just sweep it under the rug? Well, now let's hope after the Wall Street Journal piece, President Trump says he's going to sue Rupert Murdoch. Steve Bannon's on the show this morning, his show, bragging about how he saw this a mile away. I mean, Fox News. I mean, we've talked about that as well. They threw him under the bus, President Trump, as soon as they stole the election in 2020. Now they're trying to make nice. He's president now. And yet here comes the Wall Street Journal, owned by the Murdoch family, trying to take down Donald Trump yet again. This is not God's world. It certainly isn't. Melanie Phillips says the Syrian leader, Jilani, Abu Muhammad al-Jilani, has presided over an appalling massacre of the Druze in Suweida, Syria, at time of writing, an estimated 300 have been slaughtered by his troops. And you saw the footage. It's coming out now on social media. Just randomly shooting into a town, killing men, women, and children. How does this happen? I mean, these aren't even Jews that they're aiming for. They're Druze. And I think there's like 150,000 Druze that live in northern Israel. And as you saw yesterday, a lot of them are trying to break through the border to get into Syria so that they can help their brothers who are being slaughtered. It says, despite the fact that Jilani was previously a jihadi with both Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Can you imagine welcoming him into the Western family with open arms? Al-Qaeda and ISIS, that's his history. The U.S. locked him up for 5 years, from 2006 to 2011. And now he's wearing a nice suit. And now, I mean, he's trimmed his beard. And now, I mean, sanctions have been lifted. I mean, this is the new Syria. The fact that almost immediately after taking power, his people massacred Syrian Alawites was brushed aside. Who cared about them? After all, they were the same faction that included the tyrannical and newly deposed President Assad. An ISIS human bomb attack that killed at least 20 Christians was similarly brushed aside. All of these atrocities, these heinous crimes against humanity and the West, well, we just turn a blind eye to it. Who really cares about the Syrian infighting, about them trying to exterminate the Druze? Who cares about that? We've got to make a deal. We've got to negotiate. It says here, President Trump declaring Jelani to be a handsome guy, duly delisted HTS and lifted sanctions. So they're no longer a terrorist group. Sanctions have been lifted. It says the West Israel bashers queued up to fawn over their new romantic hero. President Macron of France was pictured embracing him. Jelani. Yeah, give him a big hug. He's part of us now. He thinks like we do. Two British political podcasters, Tony Blair's former director of communications, Alistair Campbell, and former Conservative MP Rory Stewart, were so excited they made their way to newly liberated Syria to interview Jelani and have their picture taken with him. I mean, this is crazy. This is insane. To have their picture taken with him? Well, you can see it right there in Melanie Phillips' article. There they are. Look at that. Jelani in the middle and these two very proper British podcasters alongside him. They can't wait to sit down with the dictator. I wonder if these two podcasters are that eager to talk to Bibi. Because he's like a rising lion. He's one of the few left in this world that actually confronts evil. And we write quite a lot about it in the latest issue of our Trumpet magazine. He was caught sleeping on October 7th. Bibi's not had a perfect track record. But look at what he's done since October 7th. The enemies of Israel have awakened the lion of Judah. And now you see some lion-like ferocity. How do you sit down and negotiate with people that just love massacring other races or ethnicities? That's not the way God took care of those kinds of problems in the Old Testament. And we'll look at that later if we have time as well. Over the past 4 days, says Phillips, their heroes' forces have been attempting the mass slaughter and ethnic cleansing of Syria's Druze. Gruesome pictures and videos have been posted online. The troops, some of whom are pictured wearing the insignia of ISIS, reportedly kidnapped and raped girls under the age of 10 in front of their parents. They cut off supplies of food, water and basic necessities from the Druze community and emptied whole villages. You know, the same spirit, by the way, is there with the Epstein sex trafficking network. Maybe without as much murder, but raping little girls, humiliating people, I mean, murdering them in a psychological sense. It's the same spirit, and you've got to confront it. You've got to expose it and then put the sin away. As I touched on yesterday, after murdering the Druze, Jelani's forces mutilated their bodies and drove over people they shot. They reportedly bombed hostels, homes and schools, carried out field executions inside Druze houses, and horrifically slaughtered the entire staff of Suweda's hospital, along with patients. You know, Israel gets accused of doing this, and then everyone zooms in on little Israel. Jelani actually does it. Nobody cares. Ho-hum. Here comes Israel stopping a genocide. I don't really know if that's newsworthy. That's the way people think in the media. No condemnation of Jelani's forces for humiliating, abusing, and slaughtering the Druze. Only condemnation of Israel for coming to their aid. This is the upside-down world we're living in. Condemn Israel about anything, always, every day, but no condemnation for the jihadi wearing a suit. Certainly not. An October 7-style massacre. 300 of the Druze slaughtered. It says here, over this real attempted genocide and ethnic cleansing, the hypocrites of the West who falsely accuse Israel of these and other crimes are silent. Their professed concern for the oppressed of the world is a lie. They care only about demonizing the Jews. Israel is the only country standing up for the Druze, yet Israel is being condemned for doing so. She says the moral perversity and bankruptcy of the West know no bounds. This is morally perverse. We just had Melanie Phillips on the show a week ago. Played the rest of it a couple days ago. But she does offer an unusual amount of moral clarity when she writes on subjects like this. So clear that this is upside down. She wrote a book many, many years ago about the upside down world. So she wrote that the other day. She had another one repeating some of the same facts because no one else will write about it. No one else cares. No, instead we got to argue over did President Trump send a card to Epstein or not? Well, how about if you find out who else was engaging in sex trafficking and raping minors? Seems like that's a more important story. This one here says, why the West has swooned over a blood-soaked jihadi. The hypocrisy, double standards, and malevolence are off the scale, says Melanie Phillips in another piece. Syrian government forces carried out a four-day massacre. She mentions the 300. It says here, as a result, Israel went into Syria to defend them. The IDF conducted, well, you saw some of the footage yesterday. The attacks of the Druze were barbaric. There were reportedly beheadings and rapes. Children were murdered in front of their parents. The troops publicly humiliated their male victims by shaving off their beards. It says here, the likes of Amnesty and Human Rights Watch were silent. Jelani's troops reportedly slaughtered the entire staff at Soweda's hospital. Yet from those who falsely accuse Israel of targeting hospitals in Gaza in order to kill patients and staff and who wickedly ignore the fact that Hamas has turned them into terrorist hubs and thus made them into legitimate military targets, there was silence. The silence, as they say, is deafening. And there's another picture. I think that's the British, maybe foreign minister, I forget, on the left. But then there's Jelani. Yeah, they're swooning over him. They're swooning over this guy who used to be in ISIS and Al-Qaeda. I mean, pick your terrorist organization. He's been there. And now he's in charge of Syria because, you know, once the Assad regime fell, then it became a perfect state. Now the sanctions can be lifted automatically. Now, I mean, we've got a partner. We might be able to expand the Abraham Accords. Yeah, invite Jelani. Who else is writing about this? Who else cares? Does it even get a mention on Morning Joe? Is it written about at all in the New York Times? Well, I don't exactly comb through those sources. Maybe they have a passing reference to it or not. But you can see by the headlines, you can see by all the nonsense from last night, yesterday, what's covered, what's important to the talking heads. Oh, with CBS, there's a changeover coming and it might be a connection to Trump that got Colbert fired. Let's talk about that for a few hours. Let's talk about the doodling. Let's talk about the stick figure and the 22-year-old birthday card. I mean, that really is. She says it. It's a kind of twisted, perverse perversity that you can't even wrap your mind around. She says something else. This is Melanie Phillips again. Well, let me just move down further. U.S. President Donald Trump declared him a handsome guy, delisting his militia. as a terrorist entity and lifting sanctions on it. All the new president had needed to do was trim his beard, don sharply cut Western clothes, replace his nom de guerre, whatever that means, of the Jilani, al-Sharia, and declare that he wanted to join the Abraham Accords. And he was miraculously transformed from a depraved fanatic into an invaluable regional player. I mean, just think about the ignorance and the stupidity that this demonstrates. That this guy is reformed because he puts on a suit, because he makes a statement. Look at what's playing out on the ground. And who is there on the world stage that has the courage, the lion-like courage, to confront it, to confront evil? Well, so far, just one individual. We'll come to him in a second. Western leaders don't know about or understand such things because they choose to shut their minds completely to the realities of the Islamic world and the fanatical Islamist mindset. It demonstrates a total ignorance of human nature, of the Islamic mindset. And here again, Melanie Phillips is one of the few to even write about this. Secularists are unable to understand any religious mindset, which seems to them too ridiculous to take seriously. They believe accordingly that Islamists are driven to commit their terrible atrocities from oppression, dire poverty, or despair. And this thinking is in the Trump administration. As long as they have a deal to prosper financially, then they're going to love the Jews. They'll love the Druze. We can welcome them into our community. It says such Westerners accordingly seize upon and any apparent confirmation that religious fanatics are deep down just like themselves. That's why they all swooned over Jilani. Well, he's just like us. This same fantasy generated the disastrous Western attitude towards the Arab war of extermination against the Jewish homeland in Israel. It says it refuses to believe that this is a war of extermination because that seems so utterly pointless. It makes no sense to the Western mind that can only think in terms of cause and effect. That's also one reason why the West finds it so difficult to understand anti-Semitism. I mean, you go right down the line. They don't understand human nature. They don't understand that this world is cut off from God. They don't understand that the kill the Jews mantra is embedded into their founding documents and their religious texts. This has been the way of man from the beginning. I mean, start in Genesis 4. Well, read the first three chapters too to get the context. But in Genesis 4, we're introduced to murder. And who is the father of murder and lies? That's in John 8:44. This is the spirit that we see everywhere in the world, a spirit of hatred, a spirit of murder. It says here, a few days after October 7, Ron Dermer was sent a shocking video in which young Palestinian Arab children were talking about wanting to kill Jews. The point was that these weren't children from Hamas-run Gaza, but from the Palestinian area of Jerusalem. Well now, think about what Zechariah 14 and verse 2 says, and how that Jerusalem is going to be divided by violence. It's coming. And we got a preview of how it'll play out on October 7. Hamas terrorists just going from house to house, randomly killing, cutting, beheading, burning, looting. We better get ready for it. People don't want to believe it, said Dermer, because they don't want to stare this evil in the face and say it has to be dealt with. They simply refuse to confront evil. They try to befriend evil. They try to sit down and negotiate with the devil. And it never works. It always backfires. This was Bibi Netanyahu yesterday updating the Israelis on the operation there in southern Syria, clip 10. It's Hebrew, it's in Hebrew, but it has the subtitles.
אני מבקש לעדכן אתכם מה עשינו בסוריה ומה נעשה בסוריה. אנחנו קבענו מדיניות ברורה. פירוז המרחב רומית לדמשק מהגולן ועד אזור הר הדרוזים. זה קו אחד. הקו השני, שמירה על האחים של האחים שלנו, הדרוזים בהר הדרוזים. שני הדברים האלה הופרו על ידי המשטר בדמשק. הוא שלח צבא דרומית לדמשק לתוך האזור שצריך להיות מפורז, והוא התחיל לטבוח בדרוזים. את זה לא יכולנו לקבל בשום צורה. ולכן הנחיתי את צה"ל לפעול ולפעול בעוצמה. חיל האוויר תקף גם את כנופיות הרצח וגם את הרקם, והוספתי יעד גם לתקוף בדמשק את משרד הביטחון. תוצאה מהפעילות העצומה הזאת, השתררה הפסקת אש, והכוחות הסורים נסוגו חזרה לדמשק. זה חשוב, זה הפסקת אש שהושגה מתוך עוצמה. לא מתוך בקשות, לא מתוך תכנונים, מתוך עוצמה. ואנחנו משיגים שלום מתוך עוצמה, שקט מתוך עוצמה, ביטחון מתוך עוצמה, בשבע חזיתות. זו גם תהיה המשך המדיניות שלנו. לא נאפשר לכוחות צבא לרדת דרומית לדמשק, לא נאפשר לפגוע בדרוזים, בג'בל דרוזים.
That's Prime Minister Netanyahu just taking charge of the situation. How refreshing. He just put his foot down and said, enough. He's created a demilitarized zone in southern Syria. It's not even his country. But he says, if you go in there, you better prepare to face a lion. You're not going to carry out a genocide. My father in the latest Trumpet magazine, Benjamin Netanyahu is the rising lion of Israel. He says the world would be in a much more dangerous place without him. I mean, how timely is the latest issue of the Trumpet magazine? It just came out a few weeks ago. A rising lion. He said the world would be in a much more dangerous place without Bibi. The success that Israel has had with Operation Rising Lion is going to give way to the end of the watchman work of a man chosen by the people. Then there will be only one watchman message left, God's watchman. There's the latest cover. But you can see, like my father says at the beginning of this issue, I mean, he's inspired by this kind of leadership. Because spiritually, this is what we have to do when confronting evil. You have to be prepared to stare it in the face, to resist against it, to draw near to God at the same time, for sure. And as you see, I mean, in the national sense, you don't see that spirit anywhere, except from Gentile nations that will just ruthlessly move through an area and destroy everything in their way. Netanyahu, this is from the Times of Israel, entire area between Damascus and Israel border off limits to the Syrian army. That's bold. I mean, that's showing some strength. There's some lion-like power that he's exerting. There's a great article in the National Interest just about how that Netanyahu's really one of the world's titans. It even says this is the age of Netanyahu. Here again, how appropriate, how timely for this to be covered in the Trumpet magazine. Tomorrow's News Today says here, the fact is most of America's presidents, I'm switching over to the National Interest now, most of America's presidents have been little more than competent managers, and our time is a little different than in past eras. There is one man, I mean, it does talk about how consequential the Trump presidency is and has been. But for the most part, you know, presidents get in there and they just try to manage the situation and win over the media. In the case of Trump, though, he just set that aside, that approach, and challenged the media. I mean, in this area, He has been good, quite good at confronting evil, the evil of propaganda and deception. You look at all the victories, even in the past 24 hours. Maybe we can play that that montage that you made about PBS and the funny man, his show being canceled.
Before we start the show, I want to let you know something that I found out just last night. Next year will be our last season. The network will be ending The Late Show in May. It's not just the end of our show, but it's the end of The Late Show on CBS. I'm not being replaced. This is all just going away.
It just didn't make financial sense to have these shows anymore, but obviously hanging over all of this is the settlement that Paramount made over the 60 Minutes interview with Kamala Harris last year and all the pressure, perhaps, from the Trump administration felt by Sherry Redstone, who runs Paramount as she seeks a FCC-approved merger with Skydance.
But the timing of this actually is terrible, and it's terrible because you had the settlement with Donald Trump, and then you had Colbert and Jon Stewart criticizing that decision. And then a week later, they're saying, oh, unfortunately, we don't have the money to continue this.
Right. From the optics standpoint, the timing could not be worse for CBS. Colbert is such an outspoken Trump critic. He's just back from vacation. And as he showed there on Monday, on his first night back from vacation, he's also a thorn in his parent company's side. So this looks to a lot of Colbert's fans like another form of capitulation by CBS to the president of the United States.
Who are you with? That's what I, you people treat us so bad. Wall Street Journal has truly got, go ahead, it's a rotten newspaper. You hear me what I said? It's a rotten newspaper. But I don't want to talk to the Wall Street Journal, but look, Wall Street Journal is China-oriented, and they're really bad for this country.
And he's not wrong. This Wall Street Journal piece is a hack job, okay? And he says he's suing Rupert Murdoch, who he, you know, was his buddy. They have, you know, Fox kind of made Trump, you know. And he's suing the Journal. He's suing everybody. He says he didn't write the birthday letter that they're ascribing to him.
A lot of folks here are talking about and extolling the virtues of NPR, PBS, public broadcasting, and so forth. And, you know, talked about how, you know, they're cutting their funding is somehow going to endanger communities and rural communities. Well, when the floods were hitting the people that I represent, it took NPR through Texas Public Radio 19 hours to post anything about the flooding on its social media.
By blocking funding to NPR and PBS, it is a form of retaliation against our organizations for airing editorial programming that the president might disagree with.
In a victory for the president on Capitol Hill, the House passed legislation requested by Mr. Trump to rescind funding for foreign aid and also public broadcasting. So House Republicans approved this bill. It actually claws back a total of $9 billion. It includes about $1 billion from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. That is what funds NPR and PBS.
The thing about it is that Republicans have talked about doing this for decades. It's funded by the government and it's left-wing propaganda and taxpayers pay for it. And Donald Trump comes in there, he confronts it and he says, no, you're not going to be funded anymore. So they're going to go away, just like the not so funny man. He's going away, too. The ratings have been terrible. CBS can't afford to find advertising for him. So, I mean, these are victories, more victories for Donald Trump. But like I said yesterday, you wish he would take the same approach in confronting the evil head on with respect to the Epstein files or the deep state. Holding people to account, people that are traitors that try to destroy the country. And then you come in and you try to make nice with them or sit down with them like you would the terrorists with your diplomats. You've got to be a rising lion when you're in the midst of evil. You've got to fight it. You've got to confront it. You can't be afraid. Now, we all naturally tend to be that way. That's why we look at examples like Netanyahu and the way he's approached a very dangerous neighborhood that he's living in. He goes up to Syria. He goes into Syria to stop a genocide of other Syrians. Who does this? This national interest piece. There's one man whom many of these European and American leaders truly disdain, who will be remembered for decades onward, and about whom historians will be publishing thick biographies. That man is Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Says he's been in the position, the longest serving prime minister, 17 total years. Further on, he literally decides who to assassinate and who not to. He faces criminal indictments, forcing him to appear in court regularly. He runs a government that is besieged from within by policy differences and from without by political enemies who want to topple him. And it talks about some missteps that he's made along the way. I mean, this is more of a left-wing view, that he's unnecessarily killed all these civilians in Gaza. I mean, Israel couldn't be more strategic in the strikes into Gaza, but we'll leave that aside. It says, history will also remember Netanyahu's methodical near destruction of Hamas, followed by its methodical and thoroughly innovative destruction of Hezbollah, then the destruction of Iran's air defense system and a good part of its nuclear complex. He may have done more damage to the Houthis in Yemen than either the U.S. Navy or NATO. And let's not forget the toppling of the altogether murderous regime in Syria, which came about as a direct result of Israel's dismantling of Hezbollah next door in Lebanon. And now you get the ISIS guy coming into Syria, and Bibi goes and smacks him down. It all constitutes the first major Western military victory since the 1991 Gulf War. I mean, this is historic. Now, Judah has a very deadly wound that factors into all this as well, and the fact that it's too strategic and that it throws lifelines and it doesn't go in for the complete kill. Netanyahu did all of these things practically alone in political terms, essentially changing his defense and other security ministers as well as his top military officers along the way. Arguably, no one else in Israel could have done it and could have essentially manipulated President Trump into bombing Iran. Netanyahu has shown that that military skill, no matter how extraordinary, is just not enough unless matched with the same degree of political skill and a willingness to take incredible risks. And it says he's not finished. There's more to come. It says the Middle East today is living through the age of Netanyahu. I mean, anytime you have someone rise with courage, like a lion, you can be sure that there's going to be a lot of resistance and hatred for that individual. And we see it. It's all over the world. I mean, so many of the leaders in America and in Britain absolutely despise Bibi Netanyahu. Listen to this from JNS. They're commenting on that week that Netanyahu's entourage had with President Trump and his staff. Clip 11.
The left wing in Israel lost a stunning election, and the right wing, after five consecutive elections, basically put an end to, you know, this political drama in which the left just tried everything that they could to go against the will of the Israeli public and to block Prime Minister Netanyahu and his allies from forming a government. And the right wing put a stop to it. And they won 65 seats against 35 seats from the left wing. Really like a landslide victory. Well, I think it's 65-45. And the fact that Netanyahu was able to, on the one hand, balance a war with the very complicated parliamentary system that makes it difficult for anybody to govern, with his own trial, on the other hand, I think it just shows in part the greatness of Netanyahu, the ability to function and balance so many different functions of being the prime minister of the state of Israel at the same time.
He really is an energetic individual. I forget which column they didn't have much to say there about the meeting with Trump's people, but more on just the fact that he's juggling all of these tasks one of the columns we read when we were over there. I think it might have been by Michael Oren, who was just talking about him being the perfect man for this hour in Israel, and just how his spirit and his energy are off the charts, and he hardly sleeps. He just keeps going. And again, you see some of that in President Trump as well. Now you see blind spots too, as I covered yesterday. And you just wish they would take the same approach with every matter. That's not easy to do. I want to take you through a passage in Judges, the book of Judges. It's pretty gruesome what happens here. But we'll see how God dealt with it and who he used. Judges 19 and verse 22, it says, "Now as they were making their hearts merry, behold, the men of the city, certain sons of Belial, beset the house round about." I mean, this is basically Sodom and Gomorrah all over again. This man and his wife, they're dining and they surround the house. These murderers, these rapists, how do you deal with this? It says, "Bring forth the man that came into your house, that we may know him." Again, very similar to Genesis 19. We're kind of picking it up in the middle here. But verse 23 says, "And the man, the master of the house, went out unto them. Nay, my brethren, nay, I pray you, do not so wickedly, seeing that this man has come into my house, and do not this folly. Behold, here is my daughter, a maiden, and his concubine. Them I will bring out now," it says, "and humble you them, and do with them what seems good unto you. But unto this man, do not so vile a thing." I mean, it's hard to imagine even offering this as an alternative to sodomy, you know, raping a man. But they did. Verse 25, "But the men would not hearken to him. So the man took his concubine and brought her forth unto them." This is verse 25. "And they knew her, and they abused her all the night until the morning. And when the day began to spring, they let her go. And then came the woman in the dawning of the day and fell down at the door of the man's house where her lord was till it was light." So they sexually abused this woman all night long. Just a gang rape. "Her lord rose up in the morning and opened the doors of the house and went out to go his way. And behold, the woman, his concubine, was fallen down at the door of the house, and her hands were upon the threshold. And he said unto her, Up, and let us be going. But none answered. And then the man took her upon his donkey, and the man rose up and got unto his place." So just abusing this woman all through the night. And then, you know, you can read some of the other gruesome details of this account. And again, God inspired this to be canonized. It's in the Bible. And there's some important lessons here. It was the tribe of Benjamin, I think, that carried out this atrocity. And so in the next chapter, you can see the other Israelite tribes. They assembled and they wanted to confront this evil. To confront it, not run from it, not sit down with it and try to negotiate some sense into them, these rapists. Notice what it says in verse 18 of chapter 20. It says, "And the children of Israel arose and went up to the house of God and asked counsel of God." What does God want us to do? How should we respond to this? It says, "Which of us shall go up first to the battle against the children of Benjamin?" And the Eternal said, "Judah shall go up first." Now you can see in Numbers 2 that this is traditionally what Judah did. The tribe of Judah led the way when there was any kind of military campaign. And God says to them, "Judah, go first. You lead the way. You're the rising lion, and the rest will follow." I mean, that's the way it is with inspired leadership. It inspires others to follow. God used the tribe of Judah, and that's, of course, little Israel today in the Middle East. They're actually the tribe of Judah. Jew is their nickname. U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, of course, lays this all out in a great many details. You can study it, and you can know who we are. The United States is Manasseh. Ephraim is the U.K. today. And the little Israeli state, that would be Judah. My father writes in the latest trumpet, there's something in Judah's lion-like qualities that God loves. Studying the Jews' lion-like qualities also helps us to better see the qualities of the real Lion of Judah, Jesus Christ. You can see that in Revelation 5 and verse 5. It's inspiring to study these kinds of godly qualities. God confronts evil. I mentioned the story of Phinehas the other day in Numbers 24 or 25. The way that he confronted, and God praises that. You've got to get the evil out. As I said yesterday, I mean, this is the approach that President Trump, he has shown some courage. You see it in the way he confronts the left-wing media. He says, you're fake, you're phony. My father says here, what Israel did to neutralize Iran teaches all mankind powerful lessons about what it takes to overcome evil. And it's a specific reminder to those God has called to back his watchman work in this dangerous time. To achieve what God wants us to do, we all need the spirit of a rising lion. Well, Israel, back in Judges 20, I mean, the spirit of the rising lion was there, and God said, yeah, I want Judah to lead this expedition, to lead this campaign against these evil rapists and murderers. You've got to confront it. You don't want to sweep it under the rug. You don't want to say, hey, I don't know why anyone's even interested in this kind of evil, this kind of filth. It's really just kind of boring. No, you better confront it. God wants us to look at the evil within. Within, there's plenty of it. There's plenty of it in Syria as these jihadists in suits. Well, the ones, I guess, heading south aren't necessarily wearing suits. They're carrying machine guns, and they're just murdering people right and left, just like October 7. I mean, yeah, that's vile. That's evil. We can see that. Well, I should say some of us can see that. Others celebrate, even murder. But then with respect to all the Epstein files and the sins that are uncovered there, if the Wall Street Journal was interested enough to actually go uncover that instead of looking for a little birthday note from 22 years ago, which is probably fake, as President Trump said that it was. But look at what God is trying to help for us to see. There's a sickness here. Ezekiel 8 says, no, come back, look in this wall. You're going to see that the abominations are even worse than you thought initially. I mean, sexual sins, it goes all the way back to the earliest times of man, from the very beginning. You see it in Judges 19 and 20. Just sickening stuff. Abuse of the highest kind. I mean, just the worst kind, I should say. This article at The Federalist. I mean, it's titled, Why Can We Trust God When Tragedy Strikes, Whether He Allows It or Not? And then basically what you get as you go through it is just a bunch of human reasoning. Can't really figure it out. Why is there evil? And why doesn't God do something about it? Why doesn't God prevent the tragedy in Central Texas with all the flooding? Basically, even traditional Christianity cannot accept the fact that this is not God's world and that God is about to administer correction on the Israelite people for our many sins. They just cannot conceive of a God of judgment. And so you get articles like this. Americans have watched with horror as as more than 100 people, you know, died in this flooding. I have to hurry. It says, why did God allow this to happen? If God is truly all-loving and all-powerful, why did he not step in and prevent the tragedy? Is God even good at all? Does he even care? Well, you see, Mystery of the Ages will open your mind to understand everything you need to know about so-called natural disasters, about the spirit of murder, about sex sins, about God's purpose and plan, what he's working out here below, why he's had, for the most part, a hands-off mentality for 6,000 years. That doesn't mean he doesn't have a purpose. He certainly does. Aversion therapy is what Mr. Armstrong used to call it. We're going to get to the point where we look at ourselves and what we've done, the sickness we've caused, the death, the destruction, the carnage. And finally, we'll begin to say, you know, maybe God does know best. I mean, here you read, a religious article at the Federalist, and they don't know. They can't understand. We certainly can at the Trumpet website. Mr. Armstrong certainly did in Mystery of the Ages. If you don't have Mystery of the Ages, it's there across the table. You know what it looks like. You've seen it before. If you don't have it, make sure you call our operators today and request your free copy. I want to leave just a few minutes left so that you can finish this week of broadcasting here at the Trumpet Daily with the Friday segment of World Watch. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us today. We thank you for joining us all week, and we'll see you next time.
One of Russia's largest military drone factories was built with Chinese partners and relies on a steady supply of Chinese components, a July 8th Bloomberg investigation found. Documents obtained by Bloomberg show that Russian firm Arrowhit is among the largest suppliers of deadly drones used by the military. Thanks to Chinese workers and components, Arrowhit is now producing some 10,000 drones per month. The Chinese Communist Party maintains that it is not supplying lethal aid to Russia to avoid being subject to Western sanctions banning such provisions. The new investigation shows that these Chinese claims and denials are blatant lies. In previous cases, China has avoided explicitly violating Western sanctions that outlaw providing Russia with lethal aid. But the new drone cooperation is a blatant violation of sanctions and may mark a new level of Chinese support. China's willingness to aid Russia's war in spite of major risks should not surprise us. Bible prophecy warns that Russia and China will become full military allies in the near future. To learn more, read our free booklet, Russia and China in Prophecy. Germany is considering procuring up to 2,500 armored fighting vehicles and 1,000 battle tanks, according to sources cited by Bloomberg on July 4th. These tanks would support NATO's request for Germany to contribute 7 combat brigades to the alliance's forces within the next decade. German Defense Minister Boris Pistorius and the military leadership are reportedly reviewing the order of up to 2,500 GTK Boxer-wheeled armored vehicles and 1,000 Leopard 2 battle tanks, which could cost as much as 25 billion euros. Earlier this year, the Bundeswehr received approval to procure more than 1,000 modular armored vehicles from Finnish defense contractor Patria. Germany is taking enormous steps toward militarization. Part of NATO's original purpose was to prevent Germany from becoming too powerful, but this has effectively been reversed. To learn more about what Bible prophecy predicts regarding Germany's strong military, read Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury's article, Germany's Astonishing Military Rise. The Russian Foreign Ministry announced July 3rd that it had accepted the credentials of Gul Hassan Hassan, ambassador for the Taliban-led government in Afghanistan. This makes Russia the first country to recognize the Taliban as Afghanistan's legitimate rulers. China, Pakistan, and the United Arab Emirates all have ambassadors in Kabul, but they have stopped short of having a bilateral exchange of ambassadors or making another move of official recognition. This recognition does little more than formalize Russia's actions in Afghanistan. In 2021, when the Taliban ousted the U.S.-backed former government, Russia was one of the few countries that didn't close its embassy in Kabul. In 2022, Russia was the first country to sign an economic agreement with the Taliban, agreeing to export food and fossil fuels to Afghanistan. This April, Russia removed the Taliban from its list of terrorist organizations. After the U.S. invaded Afghanistan in 2001, the country essentially became an American territory. But since 2021, the nation is clearly falling into Russia's sphere of influence. To learn more, read Why Russia and China Are Rejoicing. To learn more about current world news and how it relates to Bible prophecy, please visit thetrumpet.com.